The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
All right, y'all. Welcome back to the Fearless Podcast. We are at episode 80, and we have a lot of stuff going on here at the farm. And I do want to, we just recently made some changes where we are doing a local meat pickup. So I want to encourage everybody to go to thetexasboys.com. Make sure you're on our email list because we are now implementing a monthly meat pickup. So you won't be required to buy a quarter, a half, or a whole. We should be able to do kind of like an a la carte. And so if you are on our emailing list, you will get notified of that with the pricing and all that good stuff. But today, y'all, a very good friend of mine is returning to the Fearless Podcast. I want to welcome Trinity Vandenacre to the Fearless Podcast. Hey, Trinity, how you doing today, sir?
Doing pretty good.
Well, Trinity, if y'all are unfamiliar with his YouTube channel, it's under his name, Trinity Vandenacre, and he is doing an awesome job over there. That's kind of how we met, was through his YouTube channel. And Trinity was recently in my beloved state of Texas, doing a great work. And I wanted to have him on to discuss the water issues that are obviously not just here in Texas, water issues around the country through control and manipulation. They are absconding property and all these other things. And I wanted to talk about the Martin Nichols Reservoir. Trinity, maybe you could, first off, maybe if you want to start out, give us a little bit of your background, because you have a very interesting story and now you're a YouTuber. Maybe give us a little bit of that background and we can go right into this Martin Nichols Reservoir issue.
Okay. And it's a Marvin Nichols.
Marvin. Oh, I wrote it down wrong.
Yeah, check that's that right. Out. So Marvin Nichols Reservoir. Yeah. And, you know, I basically started out just, I was born in Montana, raised in some agriculture, managed a horse leasing company for 20 years. And because of that, got involved with all kinds of agriculture industry. My parents are all both born into farming families here in Montana. And, you know, just got around the all aspects of agriculture and land. So the hunting aspects and the outfitting aspects and the tourism, plus the agriculture side, the farming and the ranching parts, which are completely different. And so understanding that there's such a need for people to realize where their food comes from, what's happening to their land, that the people that live and grow the food and the resources that we actually use in the cities, that people use in the cities, they don't really understand where they come from, and they don't understand that we're kind of becoming the enemy of the populace, of the media and everything. And as far as climate change goes, they're using those as excuses to really make it hard for the people who supply our resources to survive. And that really is why I even went down to do this story on this new reservoir.
So maybe kind of explain to us how you became aware of what was going on. And I mean, here you are using your resources and your time to educate people and expose this. Maybe you could kind of give us a little bit of the backstory.
Yeah. And just make people aware, you know, this is something, and these are just all my experiences now. When I first heard about it, somebody contacted me from Texas and said, hey, we're going to get kicked off our land. They've been working on this for quite a while, many years, and it just seems to be escalating. And so, you know, would you do a story on it? Come down and see what they're doing. And of course, when you first hear about something, you're like, okay, well, and what this reservoir is for, supposedly, is for water to supply the Dallas-Fort Worth area with more drinking and lawn water, things like that. So because I understand that is needed, you know, cities are going to need that resource of water. It's like, okay, I have several questions about whether this is, you know, when they're taking land for a reservoir for water for a city, I don't know, you know, is this needed or is this, does this have to happen for these people to get water? Yes, I don't want to see, the last thing I want to see is more farm and ranch land being lost in America since 2020. I mean, since the year 2000, so that's 24 years is what I was trying to say. We've lost 50 million acres of farm ground in America. So why, you know, when you're talking about a 66,000 acre reservoir, yeah, I wanted to figure out what the story was. And what I found out was a lot more than I bargained for. I kind of thought there's probably a way around this, but I didn't realize a lot of areas that this is going to impact. And then when you get involved with a community like that, where they're so tight knit, and, you know, I talked to a lady who's 92 years old and did a video with her, and all these people that are now wrapped up in this reservoir problem who can't get out. I mean, that's one thing we should talk about is the fact that they're stuck. So they're stuck waiting for their land to be taken away. And I'll explain that more in a minute, but it's just so sad to see a community like what you would see anybody desiring to be involved in, a community where everybody's a part of it, that they help each other out, they get together, and, you know, it's just one of those amazing communities. Yeah, you got some, you know, some problems in any community, but watching and being around these people and going, these people now, after being there 100 years, are going to get kicked off their land, handed a pittance for their land as far as money goes, for the sake of this reservoir that, as far as I can tell now, isn't really needed. And that's kind of what I came to understand. So,
and why I'm so passionate about this, which I appreciate the effort and what you're doing, is it took us, we've had this whole concept of a living legacy and providing a real-time, in our lifetime, inheritance for our children. And we've been able to, through hard work and by the grace of God, to accumulate about 50 acres. And we know several people in the same position as us. And to think that some bureaucrats could arbitrarily come in and take that all away. And it would be one thing if you were getting full real market value, not that you could replace all your time and effort and infrastructure and history. And, you know, mom and dad were buried here, you know, and all the family history and all the work ethic and all the sacrifice that they gave toward that land and developing it and maintaining it and improving it. And then somebody's just going to come in and flood it. And then what's more is, not only are they going to arbitrarily take it, they're profiteers, they're robber barons, and they're going to not just extract that, but then they're going to be able to, air quotes, legally profit on it 100-fold, 1,000-fold. And this is what's so tragic and why I'm so passionate about it, because I'm next, you're next. I mean, any one of us could be next, which is why it's such an important topic and issue. Oh, these, you know, these hillbillies and whatever, you know, and yeah, you know, these are the talking points. And, you know, this issue is so important, and why it's really important to me, that whole reservoir infrastructure is probably only like an hour north of me. So it could very easily encroach the next reservoir for the Dallas continues to grow exponentially to Texas's detriment. All of our major metropolitan areas continue to expand unabated. And I'm not for restricting any of that. Like this entire reservoir thing could be resolved if they would just let the free market work. Because if they would let this is why it's a scheme and a scam, profiteering and just being robber barons. Because if they were to attempt to purchase that much land the price would skyrocket. They would have to pay through the nose for it as they were trying to gobble it up. And that's the free market is designed by supply and demand, and it will function and it will prevent these things from happening. I think that's a major point here that I want to stress. If there wasn't public-private partnerships and government intrusion and then all of this bureaucratic nonsense and preservation laws. Oh, I'm sorry. We need 22,000 acres. So we're going to have to take an additional 80,000 acres to after we use and gobble this up. You know, we're trying to preserve the natural habitat and the deer and the squirrel and all this bureaucratic green nonsense talking points, when the reality is it's to steal the property for pennies on the dollar, to monetize it and to profiteer off of it a thousandfold. And meanwhile, these hardworking people that have inherited their land, they've kept it, they maintained it, they paid all of these stupid property taxes. I think that's another great jumping off point, that as we expose these different things, I think South Dakota just presented a bill they're voting on to abolish property tax, which I think is just a great idea. And I hope that Texas picks up on that trend and that states start to conform to this, because this land grab, besides the fact, you know, you're not just outplacing generational families that have been there for hundreds of years. You are destroying this infrastructure that is bringing us our food and is bring. I get these comments all the time. Why these people need the resources. They need the resources that are presently being generated on this land. Why would they do this? Why would they pollute this? Why would they destroy this? And I can't necessarily answer that question. I don't know what just happened to my screen.
Yeah, it went dark, didn't it? Well, here's the thing. Let's lay out this reservoir, because you said you're an hour away.
Yes. Yeah, which I'm probably way? Like south.
So that you might be in trouble with even this one because of what you're saying. So here's the deal. It is a 66,000 acre reservoir. That's where the water's going to be. Okay. But something that Texas has, and I'm not sure if this is a Texas thing or if this is United States thing, I'm not positive, is what they've been implementing now is what's called mitigation. So they're going to take 66,000 acres and they're going to take a buffer zone around that for flood control. And we'll talk about that, because somehow, as far as the lake that they just did, in a different place, Goddard Lake or something like that, where they just did this, in that flood zone where there's not supposed to be any building, somehow they were able to sell lots in that flood zone. So they take it away from people. They take the 66,000 acres, they pay them minimum price, or they force them off if they refuse to leave with eminent domain. And then somebody is able to sell those lots and make money on them, on the land that they just kicked you off of. But they don't just take the 66,000 acres because of something called mitigation. Mitigation then is a 1-to-1 up to 1-to-6 acres. Mm. And so what they do is if they take out 1 acre of hardwood, now this is what I was told down there. I'm coming out with a video tomorrow morning, kind of explains all this. You take out 1 acre of hardwoods that you flood. They need to replace that. This is what they call it. Replace it by purchasing another acre of hardwood. But if it's not hardwood, if they buy pasture land, 1 acre pasture land isn't the same as 1 acre of hardwood. So they can buy up to 6 acres of hardwoods to offset that 1 acre that they flooded. Now, keep in mind, they're not actually creating anything, because that acre of hardwood was already there. They're not creating anything. So this is zero.
Yeah, they're destroying. And then what they're doing is they're
buying private land.
Yeah.
Putting in the hands of government. So it's a way to actually transfer private land to government legally through what's called mitigation to supposedly replace land that they're not replacing in any way. But that land that they mitigate does not have to be near the reservoir. There's land right next to this reservoir, the Marvin Nichols proposed reservoir, that was taken for something called Cooper Lake. And it's nowhere near Cooper Lake. They can take it anywhere they want to replace that. So if you're in Texas and you think, well, this isn't going to apply to me. And the other thing they're doing is not saying where that mitigation land, how much mitigation land and where it is right now. They won't tell them until after they do the permitting process. So at some point in this process, they're going to say, oh, we're going to take this many acres. It could be most likely somewhere around 500 or 200,000 acres total. So that's 100 and or more, could be more if they take, you know, 4 or 5 to 1 acres, and they can pick out what acres they want. So they could come to your place and say, well, you're on, you know, you're the area we want, and walk in and force you off your land. And you wouldn't even see it coming until it happened. I mean, that is so insane. I couldn't believe this was actually true until I went down there and started talking to these people. I'm like, I don't even understand. Not only do I not understand how you can sell land that you just took from somebody at $2,500 an acre or whatever it is that they're going to pay, and sell it for $100,000 for a half acre that's in a flood zone that you just created, but also now you have incentives, and I'll talk about incentives in a minute. Now you have incentives for the government to get involved because they want more land with these new initiatives for climate and all that. They, you know, like the, I don't know if you've heard about the 30 by 30, you know, where the government wants to own more land for these initiatives. Well, this is a way for them to do it. If they step in and get involved with the Marvin Nichols thing, they stand to gain government land of over 100,000 acres from wherever they want to take it. In so you put the lake in, mitigation steps in, takes land wherever they want, then through eminent domain and forced sale, and then you have a whole bunch of private land going over to the government plus the Marvin Nichols reservoir. So I didn't really understand how that worked, and I'm not even sure. As far as the lot thing goes, I'm not sure how they do that. All I heard was that they told one guy that they're going to take his, he said, well, the water's not going to cover my land. Can I just stay here? And I'll have lakefront property. He said, no, we're going to take it. We're going to improve it, which I have no idea what that means, and then resell it. So he can't buy it. He can't even buy it back unless he wants to pay 10 times the money for it.
And have they mentioned to them what kind of rate they're going to get as far as a per acre rate or ain't that? None of that's been determined yet.
That has to be negotiated. So, and the thing is, you know, you might think, well, why are we talking about this? Because it's such a, it's not, you know, this isn't supposed to be implemented till 2050. Right. Well, we're talking about it now because at this moment, okay, they keep moving up the date. But if they want to get this accomplished by 2050, they have to go through the permit process, which takes 20 years. So to go through the permit process, they're going to have to start now. They're starting right now. In fact, the comment period for the feasibility study, I don't know, hopefully you're not hearing all that dinging. I don't know, somebody's dinging me. But anyway, the feasibility study comment period ends today. So this thing is, even though it's out there a long ways, this stuff is happening right now. And the closer you get, the worse it can get. Because once you step into permitting processes, as soon as any project gets to the point where it starts a permitting process, typically it doesn't fail. It doesn't stop after that. Because once you start the permitting process, all you have is a set of hoops, right? It's like you go this far, somebody says then, okay, now you gotta give us this. You gotta show us this study. You gotta do that. But there's no, if you don't do that, you're gonna fail.
Stop it. It's pushing the boulder.
Yes.
Just pushing the boulder off of the top of the hill, and then it's gonna roll down to the bottom and destroy everything in its path.
Right. So I mean, once you start that process, that's a really bad situation to be in. But these people can't sell their land now. So it doesn't matter what the time period is, you're stuck. If you have a, so I talked to one guy, he's on a place his whole family has been on for about 100 years. In 19, I can't remember when it was, he showed me where his grandpa had a still back in the woods where he was trying to make some, he was making extra money by making whiskey, I believe, and was actually right there, was arrested by the feds. This is, and he showed me where his house used to be, you know, the old homestead home. And this is land that their family's been on for a long time. He's saying, and he told me, he's like, okay, I was thinking, well, maybe I can get ahead of this. I'm going to section off. I'm just going to see if I can sell my house. Cause possibly I could sell this land and go replace it now before, you know, well, everybody that comes to look at it, their first question is, well, what about this Marvin Nichols?
Yep.
They're not going to buy it. Why would you buy land there to know you're going to be forced off of it? So all these people that have invested time, money, talked to a guy that just built his own house by hand over the last 5 years. He's invested. That's right in the bottom of the lake. So everybody that's invested time and energy and money into their homes and places. And by the way, their homes, they don't buy the homes. If you want the home, you have to take it with you. That's what they say.
Of course. That so keeps their costs down. Yeah.
It keeps their costs down. And who's going to pay to remove their home? You're not going to. And this is what I was told down there. So it's one of those things where these guys are now stuck into places they've invested a ton of money into for 100 years. Can't sell it. So even though it's like, even though this is something that people might look at, well, it's going to take another 20 years. These people are stuck with this hanging over their head right now. So every day there was a, you know, the one lady there that I was staying with, and her family lives across the road. She lives on her family land. You know, she's having major problems with sleeping because she's lying awake crying at night. She doesn't know. They can't leave. They're not going to get enough money to replace this thing, even if they do get paid for it. The place where, like, all of her family lives within 2 miles of each other, all of them are going to have to leave some and go somewhere. Where do they go? And yet this is so then it comes down to the question of, does this have to happen? Do they have to have this particular reservoir for Dallas? And that's,
let's talk about, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Let's talk about the options that they do have for water supply. What options are available for Dallas to meet their water issues and avoid the entire scenario?
So as far as what they told me was that Toledo Bend is a reservoir that both Texas and Louisiana have water for sale in Toledo Bend. Which would be 2 million acre feet, which is like 300 and something trillion gallons of water a year, right? Which is plenty. They already have a pipeline that goes from Dallas to a different reservoir. So they would only have to build a pipeline from there to Toledo Bend, which is almost the same distance as if they were to build this reservoir and build a pipeline from that this reservoir to Dallas. So it'd be the same thing, except for they wouldn't have to build the reservoir, which is going to cost them, now the estimate is around $7 billion. So they would save $7 billion building the pipeline to Toledo Bend. I don't know what they, you know, would cost them for the water. That's one option. There's also another lake that's huge that's right next to Dallas, but they won't even talk about that one because that's a recreational lake. So they don't want to draw that one down.
Yeah, that's Lake Hubbard. That's, you won't get to drive your ski boat and all that cool stuff.
Exactly. So they're not using that one. They have the other option was an old guy there, Gary Cheatwood, was telling me he's been on the water board a couple of times. And he was telling me that the Corps of Engineers did a study, and said that the lakes around there that belong to the Corps of Engineers, if that they use for flood control, they, so they go up and down to manage flood control, they drop them and then raise them. And they did a study on those lakes, and they said if they just managed that better, they could supply Dallas with all the water they need. So those are just a few options. There's several different options for that. But then you have to look at the money.
Yep.
So $7 billion is the...
None of the options involve them being able to resell and repurpose lakefront property, you know, which is very lucrative.
Well, and that's just a little piece of it. So the engineering firm that's going to do this gets 33% of $7 billion the instant they start.
Wow.
Which is $2.1 billion. Now you're up against $2.1 billion right there.
And the engineering firm, I believe, is Marvin Nichols, correct?
No, Marvin Nichols is like the guy who came up with the idea.
Oh, okay. So
the engineering firm will get, that's what they told me. Gary Cheatwood said that they get 33% of that money. So another guy down there told me, and I wasn't able to confirm this, so I don't know, that there's, because this reservoir was, the idea was put in place a long time ago. Many, many years ago was the idea came up with this. There's a large pot of federal money that was put in an account for this project. So whoever actually starts the project immediately gets that money. So if you don't, and the way these things work, I've done a few things with like the county up here. I'm not sure how this government money works, but a lot of times it's put into an account that's only for that particular reason. Like, okay, this can only be used for this one road, like in our county. Like there'll be an account that has money in it, and you can only use it to improve or work on this one road. Not all the roads in the county, this one. And they can't touch it unless they do something with this road. And I'm not sure how that happens, but if that's the case with this, then no wonder you're going to go forward with this project, because you can't get that money unless you do this project. If you don't do this project, that money just sits there. So they keep coming back to it and back to it and back to it, this project, even though they're handed lots and lots of different options. Well, that would be one of the reasons why I would think that would happen, is because if that money is actually sitting in an account that's earmarked for whoever starts the Marvin Nichols Reservoir, well, you can't get it without building the reservoir. So that's another thing.
Yeah, it would be very interesting to know how long ago this project and process started, because I think that in and of itself would clearly show that this was exclusively started as a land grab, because 20 years ago or 30 years ago, Dallas probably only needed a fourth or a fifth or a 20th of its current demand. So it shows you how these projects that take these extended periods of time, they're started under the exclusive premise of a bureaucratic land grab, because they can't say, we need all this water.
It's possible, but it might not be. It might have been back then that this was a feasible option, because back then this wouldn't have had the mitigation involved in it. Probably not the selling of lots, because this was, you know, 30 years ago. So a lot of that stuff, the other stuff was off the table. This might have been an idea that they're like, okay, we need water in the future and we want to own it, so we're going to build this reservoir. And then after that, the mitigation didn't start until more recently. I don't know, but I'm guessing that's a part of the climate stuff where they're trying to gain. So that was just that this only been implemented on one other lake. So it's not a long-term thing. So they wouldn't have gotten 200,000 acres or more. They would have just got where the lake was. But as this progresses, and, you know, it was probably somebody put forth, this is speculation on my part, probably there's always programs put forth by the government for infrastructure. So at some point, there was a bunch of money for infrastructure, roads, new dams, reservoirs. And that's why this was earmarked for this project. Somebody was like, oh, this would be Marvin Nichols. This would be a great project to put to bring water to here. And if they were the engineering firm, they're like, this could be a huge profit for us. So let's create this project. They submit their proposal. The money from whatever government program that was goes into an account for that project. And then it's stuck there. So now we come forward where there's all kinds of reasons why not to do this, but that money is still sitting there. Not only that, but you have this, where it gets really sticky is there's when you have companies that are going to bring in $2 billion in revenue. I don't know where the other $5 billion is going, but it's going somewhere, right? That's a lot of money that they're going to not get if this project doesn't go through. So then you have to, I mean, there's so much incentive to do the project as far as money goes. And when they look out here at this landscape, they're just seeing a few people. I'm like, oh, we'll just shove them off. They don't actually look at who those people are, you know, how long they've been there, what it's going to cost them, that they can't replace that land. You know, they're going to pay them something. They can't go somewhere and buy the same land or even close. Even if it wasn't, you know, you can't replace their family land, but they can't replace it. They're going to have to replace it with less acres. So they can't go replace their livelihood with this. But they don't think of that kind of stuff. It's all about, well, we got these billions of dollars we're going to lose if we don't do this project. And it becomes a steamroll operation. I think there's a lot of policies in place right now, especially with, I'm not sure why we think that saving the planet involves the government owning all the land. I don't understand that correlation, but somebody wants that to happen. So that's pushing this as well. That's an incentive. So there's just lots of incentives from massive amounts of money and power that are trying to steamroll over these few people. That's the way I see it anyway.
And it's always about unelected bureaucrats leveraging whatever the current crisis is so that they can aggrandize themselves. Because like I was saying, if they would let the free market operate, and if there was just legitimate legislation, if there is such a thing, a legitimate legislation that would say, okay, if you want to push these people off their property, pay them the current market value. If you can't use their house, that's on you. You know, this is your scheme. This is your idea. That's on you. You're going to have to pay for it, and you're going to have to demo it and all that stuff. It just clearly illustrates how this is just a robber baron move. And then when you talk about all this newer type of bureaucracy with this conservation nonsense, and I think we can even watch that as far back as Teddy Roosevelt, and as much as a lot of our state and national parks are beautiful, and it's from a very large topical view, you're like, yeah, this is really a good thing and this is a good idea. But when you watch how all of that is leveraged to steal from the citizenry, it always involves theft, and then it will always be corrupt, and it will always be, you know, a hundredfold. Like this reservoir is like what, like 20 or 30,000 acres, something like that?
No, 66,000. So just the reservoir alone is 100 square miles.
Wow.
So, and the land they're proposing, the mitigation land, is probably going to be at least 200 square miles of land, private land. 200 square miles. That is mind-boggling. And that's not, yeah. I mean, we don't know because they haven't told anybody, but I mean, there's a possibility it could be 100 square miles, but there's no way it's going to be. It's going to be at least 200 square miles that they're going to take, and it might be more than that. Could be as much as like 300 square miles. So it's one of those things. So what you're talking about is interesting. This comes down to really private property rights. Do we have the right to still have freedom in America to own your own land? Because what this is not about conservation. This has nothing to do with conservation, even though they throw that around. They did a feasibility study. Like I said, the comment period on that ends today, I believe, because it's a draft. Here's the problem. A guy named Stanley down there, the former superintendent of the school in that little area, had been there all his life. His family moved there in the 60s. He said that the problem with the feasibility study is the definition that they use to qualify it. So when you're looking to feasibility, I would have thought the feasibility study would be like, okay, what are we covering up archaeological sites, right? How much farmland are we losing in production to the country? You know, who are we displacing in the economic value of these people? That's what I would have thought it was about. But actually, the definition reads that as long as the person doing the project can come up with the funds and complete the project with manpower and whatever they need to complete the project, then it's feasible.
Mm.
So if up here in Montana, okay, we have this problem all the time where anything happens, there's seven environmental lawyers suing somebody, right? But that's, I've said for a while now, I don't believe it's actually about the environment to these people. It's about money. Because up here, if you sue the government and you win any part of the case, so they always throw in some little charge on the end that is like, you worded something wrong, so they can try to win that part. Because if they win it, taxpayers have to pay the lawyer fees on both sides. Okay, mm-hmm. So how do we know these people actually care about the environment at all? Well, look at this situation. You're destroying archaeological sites. You're destroying farm ground, which is definitely not economical or environmental. We're reducing our ability to supply food to the country. So now we have to get that same food from other countries. We have to import it. All of these things are not to the benefit of the environment, but nobody's worried about it. Why? Because it's private land.
Yep.
It's private land, so they don't get paid to sue them. So they don't care. Nobody cares because it's private land, except for the people that are actually living there. They care.
And that's why the question to always ask is key bono, who benefits? And if you just chart this out, the people that benefit are all of those involved in the process, the engineers, the law firms, the government, everybody gets their slice of the pie. It really is. It's very mafia like, as long as we get ours, if John Smith and Joey Bag of Donuts, so what, that we have to kick them off. And what's so dishonest, it was just like you were saying, the feasibility study is, can you raise this capital and can you complete the project? But the cost is being artificially suppressed by bureaucracy and by all this fine print. Whereas if they were just forced to pay fair market value, the feasibility study would crash and burn, right? So it's just a land grab. And then conveniently, after they take all this property for pennies on the dollar, by flooding this place with water, now this lakefront property is worth 1,000 times what it's worth right now. Yeah. And they have the ability to sell that off for a profit and not even reimburse these people. If there was any type of honesty in the process at all, we're going to generate all these trillions of dollars. I mean, because if it's going to cost them $7 billion, they're probably planning on, especially because of how much time this takes and all the law firms that are involved and all the people that are involved, they're probably going to make 10 to 100 times that, I would imagine.
So, and we don't know, but they're the people that are all going to pay for this is, and we can talk more about some of the other stuff I found out, but it's like the people are going to pay for this on both sides. You're going to have whatever they spend for this reservoir. They're not paying it. It's coming up, coming from their taxpayers, or they're going to up the water bill.
Yep.
So if you're getting water from this, you're probably going to pay for it. I don't know how that works and why they do that, but I would say you're, and so whoever is getting the water is going to have to pay more because this is such an expensive project with it. I mean, it doesn't even make sense though. I mean, the money they're spending on this project, $7 billion. The dam is 10 miles long. It's not even a good area to flood. I mean, it's like up here in Montana, if you have a reservoir, you find a canyon, you build from one wall of the canyon to the other wall, and you back up a whole bunch of water behind it. This is like flat. You have to build, it's like going on a flat spot, and you have to build three walls to keep the water in. It doesn't even make any sense. But whoever is making the money doesn't really care about the people on either end. And the people in Texas should be concerned about this everywhere, because even if this goes in, we don't have any idea now where that mitigation land is. You are not safe from this if you live in rural Texas somewhere. Over the next few years, they're going to come out with where that land is, and it might be right where you're sitting. I have no idea. Nobody knows. Well, I don't know if nobody knows. Nobody, none of us know. So that is, there's just so many concerns with this. And the money side of this makes it so the people who do get something out of it are definitely not the people of Texas. Even if they get the water, they're going to pay for it anyway. But you got the whoever's doing the construction, and then you have the government's going to come out with at least, 100 plus square miles of land from it. And apparently the land, the government land, at least what I heard down there, is it doesn't exactly work exactly like up here, where most government land is like any of the public can access it at any time. For some reason down there, it's for hunting leases. So people lease the land, or if you have to have permission to go on it. Anyway, that's what I was told. I'm not really familiar with that. These types of things, though, are just throw me off that this might get steamrolled over and not stopped, even though it makes no sense other than money, and it makes only sense for government land and whoever's doing the construction and engineering. Those are the people that are going to benefit. And the people that live there, the people that don't live there that are accessing the water, they're all going to pay for it. It's like, and then you do this feasibility study, and it's not that the people that did the feasibility study are at fault. It's the definition they have to go by. I mean, whoever approved it, it's like, this is the definition in this situation that we have to go by. It doesn't make any sense. It's like when I went down and did the wolf video when they introduced wolves. All of this to me, what I'm saying, all this to me is making it harder and harder for the rural America. We are an easy target. We're very few people. All they're just hillbillies. All they don't, even though they supply all the food to the country, mm-hmm. They're somebody to be shoved aside. They're the cost to be reduced, everything. So in even Colorado, they were supposed to do a feasibility study, but as far as I could tell from the people down there, they didn't. Therefore, they couldn't release the wolves on the Forest Service ground. They released them on a piece of state ground because it didn't have to do the study if they did that. Well, a piece of state ground is 1 mile by 1 mile. You know how long the wolves stayed on that thing. It was about 14 minutes,
They didn't know. Yeah.
They didn't know they were supposed to stay on state ground. When power comes up against rural America, we're really easy to steamroll over. We don't have they can jump around the hoops. We don't have the money and power to do that.
And this green agenda has made it that much more easy. There's this dairy north of me that was a generational dairy. And every time I drive by it, It's so sickening. Now it is a solar farm. And you see this once lush, beautiful pasture that was grazed on by cows, you know, so the soil is beautiful, black and rich. And now all it is like silicone sheets of virtue signal. Like that solar farm is not, will never produce the amount of energy associated with the cost of even setting it up. And what it can never be calculated in that is the loss of the animals on the property and the improvement of the land and all those other items that are just, it's so tragic. And most people are just so busy with their 9-to-5 and everything else they're doing. They don't even have the bandwidth or the time or the wisdom, the education to know that, like, this is really important. We need to do something about this. We need to engage in this. And it is incredibly tragic. Do you have any resources or recommendations on who we can contact or who we can talk to push back against this or just to vocalize? I don't know if did I lose you, Trinity? Your screen went black. I might have lost Trinity for a second. I'm going to give him a chance. What I've noticed with the StreamYard. You are.
Somebody, I'm trying to do this on my phone and somebody tried to call me and that.
Oh, gotcha.
Shuts it off. Yes. So, and we're talking, when you're talking about, to me, it gets really tricky when you're talking about energy. You know, you're talking about the solar panels. In the green initiatives, they favor what somebody has decided is green, right? Instead of what's cheapest, what's best for the environment for the amount of electricity produced. Okay. I am just not for any wind generation or solar farming that covers up farm ground and or a pasture land. It's just, I don't understand it. And in Texas, they're spraying out forests to make way for solar panels. This is just not wise. I mean, to me, number one, you have to run wires all the way from wherever these solar panels are to get the power to your grid, right? But this land is irreplaceable. So you're not able to recover this land anymore. When you cover it with solar panels, you are just covering something that produces food. I don't understand how to get this across as well. The more ag land that we take out of production, the only way to replace it is to buy that product from a different country and import it. Now, well, in my opinion, we need to be more reliant on ourselves, not other countries. When you look at any country that gets in really big trouble financially or anything, it has to do with not being able to get things or some other country controlling their food supply, their fuel supply, their oil supply, their electricity supply. Because when you're importing something, they have power over you. Whoever that is has power over you. So why would we take out farm ground that produces food? The problem I see is money. So you're putting money into a farmer ranch that you're potentially keeping that guy in as a farmer? Not really. You're allowing him to keep the land, but you're not producing farmland. Environmentally, I don't see how that's even a point either, because environmentally you're talking about covering the soil. You have to spray that or keep the grass down somehow. You can't really graze it. Some people say that you can with goats, but I mean, it's covered. I drove past it when I was down there. I love many things about Elon Musk. This one, I think we need to put in the cities. I'm not sure why we don't cover every, you know how much surface area is on the surface of a Walmart or any huge factory or, and you're right in town where the power already
is. And the plugs are there and you can tie into it very inexpensively. Texas is the perfect illustration of how nefarious this is, just on the face. You can go to West Texas and you can buy an acre of land for $150 to $300 and it's covered with rocks, cactus, and rattlesnakes. And you can buy this land for absolutely nothing. It never rains there. So you're going to have full sun all of the time, right? You're not going to be destroying agricultural land where, or grazing land where the soil is improving. There's a carbon sink. This is another reason why they have to demonize cows and methane and cow farts and all this stuff, because it has been proven by guys like Will Harris and Joel Salatin that if you regeneratively rotate these animals, that there is a carbon sink and that there is a great net positive to the environment, let alone producing high quality food and providing a resource, you know. And here in Texas, it's so stunning to think that they could put in gigantic solar farms in over unusable land that is it's so unusable that around here it would cost you $10,000 to $15,000 an acre, which is cheap in Texas for a decent acre. You can buy acres for just pennies, and with no rain, with none of the other natural obstructions to solar, where it only makes sense. And you could do a pipeline to one of the metropolitan areas that wouldn't be that long, and they could put solar panels everywhere, and they wouldn't have to steal the people that own this land want to sell it because it's good for nothing. And we could be utilizing that, creating this air quotes renewable energy and all these other things. And meanwhile, our food infrastructure and these families that have been, you know, have been stewarding this land for hundreds of years, they could be left to do what they've been doing, what they know how to do. You know, when you knock out a farm and you knock out people that have been doing this for generations, well, maybe some new person, some startup, I mean, you have all this additional cost and you have the knowledge base where they have to learn how to do all this stuff and they got to start from scratch. The impact on our food system, let alone, you know, personal property, just like you, that was a great statement that you made, is, you know, is there such a thing anymore as personal property? And that's why I brought up property tax, because as long as we're forced to pay this property tax, I mean, do you ever don't pay it and find out how much you own your land. Don't pay your property tax and you'll find out if you own your property or not. And, you know, it is just so, it's very alarming to me. Trinity, do you have any resources or a website or anything that we can direct people to that if they just want to say, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Don't do this. Do you have any of those kind of resources where we could direct people to?
Yeah. Hold on just a second. Let me look at this, because I have next week, Wednesday, if anybody is around. Oh, where is that? Next week, Wednesday in Texas, there's going to be a meeting about this. And everybody that is in Texas needs to show up to this thing, because you're not safe with this. And it's on my phone, which I can't access right now.
Well, I will give you. Yeah, you can shoot me the information and it will be in the show notes. So that way you can, and that'll
You need to show up to that, because anybody around there that could be involved in this, as far as, well, if you're going to receive the water and you're going to get charged for it, which is, they're basically, if they can get the water for, let's say, $1 billion and yet they're spending $7 billion, that means you're getting charged more. So everybody loses, except for, in my mind, everybody in this project loses, except for the engineering firms, the construction companies, and the government. So if you're anybody else besides those people, you need to be at this meeting saying, don't do this, because I don't want to pay extra for water just because you guys want to build this thing, even though nobody else wants it. And anybody that there, also your land might be taken. I have no idea to where the mitigation is going to be. Nobody does. So it could be 500 miles away from where this is. Nobody knows. And that, I'm saying that because of the last reservoir they did. It was some of that land, 30,000 acres of it, I believe, was quite a ways. I mean, hour away, several hours away from the reservoir they built. So it doesn't have to be right there. So, and you know what you're talking about environmentally, what we're talking about environmentally. One of the things about this is, I live in Montana, where we have an average of one cow for 40 acres. That's the average grazing in Montana. Now, that's not everywhere, because some places are better, some places are worse. Right where I live is, you know, all cactus and rock. That doesn't mean I want to see that covered in solar panels. I don't see the point in ruining our landscape when we don't have to anyway. But when you look at something like this, where there's possibly 200,000 acres, 300 square miles or more, is going to be covered with water and taken by the government. And this land is one cow for every 4 acres. I'm talking about the land where the Marvin Nichols Reservoir is. Mm-hmm. One cow for every 4 acres. That means that is enormously better quality land as far as production value than I'm sitting on here in Montana. That is some top quality grazing and farming land. And that's the land we're taking out of production, not only with Marvin Nichols, but covering with windmills and solar. It's not something we want to do. I said it at the beginning. I just looked it up to make sure I was correct. But it's since the year 2000, 50 million acres of farmland have been lost across the U.S. That works out to 4.3 acres of farmland lost every minute of every day.
Hmm.
Why would we want to accelerate that with something we most likely don't even need? Hmm. So there's so many aspects to this kind of thing, but it just comes across when you're looking at this and all the conservation easement things, and private property is something that, you know, I feel very strongly about. And it's not like I have thousands of acres. I don't even have 100 acres. So it's not like I'm got this tons of land. That's why I'm really support private property. A lot of what we are beginning to understand is when environmentalists, as far as I believe, what we used to call environmentalists aren't really environmentalists anymore. They're money-making lawyers. And I have turned into an environmentalist.
Yep.
Seriously, because I actually care. Environmentalists shouldn't be how much carbon is somebody using, or how much carbon this and carbon that. That is one little tiny itty bitty piece of our environment. What we should be caring about is what our soil looks like. Are we destroying our landscapes for absolutely no reason? Is money taking the place of practical sense in what we're producing? What resources are we gaining that the cities absolutely need that we're replacing with something that is not environmentally friendly? So we have to get it from a different country. All of these questions go out the window when you just focus on carbon, 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 carbon. It doesn't really do anything for you to just focus on carbon. So I become a person who cares deeply about the environment. And I think by bringing back your food production and your resource production locally and regionally as much as possible, to where this doesn't become a corporate game of, well, a global game. Basically, what we're trying to turn this into is a global industry, and it shouldn't be, because the more globalized we become, the more money is siphoned out of these small communities, the less power we have, the more. And as much as if you don't like farmers or ranchers, because they won't let me on their land, or they act arrogant, some of them are arrogant, absolutely, people are people, right? It's not like all farmers and ranchers are the most wonderful people in the world, but they are protecting our resources. Not only are they producing our resources, they are feeding wildlife every single day. They are keeping land healthy, because they have to. When they make a decision on grazing, it isn't how much can I graze this off? It's how much can I graze this off to get a better crop next year and the year after that. If they just rape their land, they don't have an income. Yeah. So farmers and ranchers actually care about what the land looks like. They may not even like the wildlife. And they're like, well, we need to get rid of a bunch of deer or something. They're feeding them anyway. Yeah. They're producing wildlife habitat. They're maintaining it just by making a very poor living. They're doing that. And they're staying out there. I was talking to people down there in Texas in Cut Hand. Cut Hand, Texas was right where this reservoir is going to be. And they were talking about how a lot of this is started way back when for this reservoir. It creates this atmosphere, this mood that's hanging. It's like a weight on you all the time, right? And that could be part of the strategy. The longer you have it there, you run this community down till it gets old, and the only people are old people, right? And everybody doesn't have a will to fight anymore. But then when we had a fundraiser there the last evening I was there, I was blown away. There was young people. I talked to some of them. They're all coming back to that area. They've been away to cities. They've been away to different lifestyles. And they're like, I know what I have here. It's amazing. I want to come back because I want to raise my kids here. This is where I want to raise my kids. This is the down home, amazing American community where I want to live. And that's what we are trying to take away, to make a few people a whole bunch of money and give a bunch of our land to the government. I don't understand that. That has nothing to do with environment. It has nothing to do with community. It has nothing to do with saving our resources. It isn't. It just, as far as I can tell.
And you made such a great point regarding the solar issue and how we could solarize these concrete jungles, these cities that require exorbitant resources, right? So the one resource they have is the square footage of all these buildings, and they could, if they cared at all about renewable energy and solar, they could pepper these structures, these unusable structures, with solar panels and offset their own usage and allow farmers and ranchers to continue to do what they do, so that when they go to the store, there's real meat that's not printed on a 3D printer from, cellular goo that's probably imported from China. It just really shows you how, like, we're so disconnected from reality. Common sense, for lack of a better term, is dead. And people are not looking for real solutions. People aren't concerned about carbon. They're concerned about carbon credits. They're concerned about offsets and all of the dollars that are generated around that. And then there's a revival of sorts of people that have went there and done that. And they're like, I went and did the city thing and the nightlife and the bright lights and all these things.
And the money, because they make more money in the city.
Big money. Yep. Mm-hmm. And I went and did all that. And you know what? There's a lot of associated costs with that. And there's costs that are associated with that that you can't put a dollar figure on. And you know what? I've been there, done that. And I want to come back home. You know, I want the slower life. I want the community. I want the neighbors. I want the cows. I want to wake up. I want to walk outside and I want to see my cows, or I want to see my neighbor's cows. And, you know, this has real value that the big bucks that the city offers and the bright lights and the nightlife and all these different things, it's not worth it. And there's more to life than just money and glitz and glamour. And I want to return back to the simpler, slower life. There's less stress. There's more peace. There's cleaner air. There's all these different things that you can't put a dollar figure on. And people are waking up and realizing that. And, you know, meanwhile, as these robber barons take the land, and then conveniently the government gets this mitigation land. You always love the terminology.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Mitigation.
Like, it sounds, my question was, what the heck is mitigation? Cause it sounds good. You know?
Yeah.
Wow. They're mitigating something.
We created a problem and now we're going to mitigate it.
Right. We're going to mitigate it by taking away more of what you have. That's what, that's what that means. I found that out. That's what that means. And
well, Trinity,
one of the things I just got to say, what you're talking about, sometimes there's something that I'm kind of mulling over in my mind about this, people coming back to the rural lifestyle, is in our society right now, we have so much comfort. Everything is about being not uncomfortable. You don't want to be cold. You don't want to be too hot. You got air conditioning. You got, heat. In a city, a lot of your life is spent, even in the country, a lot of your life is spent avoiding discomfort. But the problem I think is that we think that is such a good way to live. But how do you really know what true comfort is? How do you really know what life is if you don't understand what discomfort is? If you change your mindset to understanding and experiencing some discomfort, some hard work, some getting out there and getting your hands dirty and building fence and feeding cows and doing chores and understanding what that takes and what it does, then you enjoy the comfort that much more. If you don't understand that, life is mushy. It feels like anything than a hangnail is discomfort to you. It gets to the point where there is no real passion or experience in life because everything is cushy, right? And I think that we have that in our society right now where nobody even knows what discomfort is. So anything feels like, oh, you're being mean to me. Everything is discomfort. I can't, blaming everybody else for your problems because it should be just perfect. And that's a utopian mindset that isn't reality. And when we have these rural areas and these people that grow up in them, they understand that that's uncomfortable sometimes. Hard work is uncomfortable sometimes. They don't really realize that it allows them to live and experience more of the world. And I believe we have a spiritual connection with nature anyway that kind of awakens that. But when you move away from it and you're comfortable in those ways, everything is supplied to you as far as resources go, and you have more money, the comfort might be there, but you're not experiencing that, the real life aspect of it, to really understand, to appreciate the comfort. And that they want to get back to that. They understand that laid back part is there, but also the hard work, the reality of being cold, of being, being outside and getting too hot, not having entertainment every second of the day. It's something I think we need to understand in this country, that if you're seeking comfort all the time, you will not really live either or experience true comfort. You're kind of experiencing much.
Yeah, the saying goes, hard times produce strong men, easy times produce soft men. We're watching that. We also see a lot of biblical truth in the fact that we were designed and created to interact with creation, to interact, to have dominion, you know. And what's fascinating through regenerative agriculture, what we find out is when we do interact with creation, with these animals, with trees and different things, we can produce, by interacting, we can produce abundance. We can produce more, not less. And it completely shatters this Malthusian concept of, you know, we're useless eaters. But God's creation, he created it in such a way. And what's wild is we're watching people that are, this is self-evident. You know, they're realizing this. They're seeing this. I did the city thing. And you know what? The value isn't there. And even though the country life, even though I might have to drive a half hour or an hour to the store to get our provisions, you know, that we can't.
That are more expensive because they're way out there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's enormous value in that. And I can see that we were designed to do this, and there's less stress. And yes, it is harder. And yes, I do have calluses on my hands and different things, but there's so much, for lack of a better word, pride. There's so much satisfaction,
mm-hmm. in satisfaction,
participating in the process, and how much more valuable. Like when you, I mean, I don't, I think those that, I think ranchers, and some of them obviously realize it, you obviously realize it. There's a lot of hobby farms around here where a lot of retired guys are running cows. And to me, it's so beautiful. You know, they're no longer in the workforce, but they're providing this service. You know, so much of that gets, I mean, we are in cow country. And like you were saying, I would easily say, you know, if I drive 30 to 40 minutes to my office, I will pass thousands and thousands of barbed wire acres. And I probably couldn't even estimate how many cows I pass on a daily basis. And it's just, you know, they really want to pave everything and eliminate all means of real life, of dirt, of soil. And
I don't understand why you would want to do that. I mean, we talk about environmental issues, and yet they don't really care. I'm sorry. I just don't see evidence that most of these groups really care about the environment. They care about money. They're using the environment to make money. And, you know, you're talking about this spiritual connection. We're talking about the regenerative agriculture. Basically, what regenerative agriculture is taking something that was natural, that was put in place by God, and trying to reproduce it on a smaller scale, meaning 60 million buffalo, or however many there was, running around the West. You know, a lot of times I run into up here, well, man, there's cow pies and everybody's upset because there's cows across the fence. And they're the same type of people that are upset about that there's a cow pie, you know, because they don't crap in little tiny pellets, mm-hmm. like a deer, right? They're upset about that kind of thing, and yet they're the same kind of people. Oh, buffalo would be so cool. Have you ever thought about? Okay, sorry about that. Am I back?
Yep, you're back. You're good.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you ever thought about if you have 100,000 buffalo, because there was herds that big, herds of hundreds of thousands of buffalo in one herd. Some people write in their journals about being stuck in one place for 3 days while a herd of buffalo goes by them that long. There's a swath of ground that's torn up like plowed ground for a mile wide, as far as they can see. And yet we're upset because a few cows drop a cow patty. Naturally, this ground needs what those animals provide. So regenerative agriculture is trying to take some of, we can't run 100,000 buffalo in one place. There's no way to do that. So you're trying to replicate that same process on the ground to benefit the ground to produce more out of less ground. The less we try to run animals on our ground in the West, the drier, the worse it gets, the less nutrients we have in the soil, everything starts to go towards desert. And that is true environmentally, true environmental speaking would be saying, this is what we need to do. We need to get back to this somehow. Now that's a major, major project to try to move all of our agriculture back to that. But I just wanted to mention that part of it. That's what we're trying to do. A process that was already happening naturally, God-given. And to say that humans weren't involved in that is ridiculous, because in the West, there was Indians all over the entire plains hunting buffalo. So there was a newspaper in Texas in 1870. I read an article. They estimated that at that time there was being 1.7 million buffalo killed before the hide hunters came. 1.7 million buffalo killed every year. If you don't think that has an impact on, they weren't trying to manage the land necessarily. They were just hunting for food. But by doing that, they were managing the land. Yep. So to think that we're just going to remove humans because they never had anything to do with this process and is ridiculous. We now have society in the West, and so we have to do the best we can to reproduce what was naturally happening in a way that we can allow society to still happen and still produce food and do the best thing we can for the ground, which is cattle. I mean, people are like, buffalo are good, cattle are bad. Well, you can breed buffalo to a cow
mm-hmm.
and have a baby. That's how closely related they are. I'm just saying, you can have beefalo, that they are very close. They don't operate on the land the same exactly, but we can reproduce that with a little man-made help as to how they operate on the land. Sorry to get off on this rant.
It's a great discussion. And so in closing, you know, the reality is, instead of stealing land and drowning everything and then mitigating it, the true focus should be on allowing ranchers to ranch, encouraging ranching, promoting ranching, supporting ranching. And hey, maybe our beef prices will go up a little bit, but you're creating an income stream in your community. You're keeping you know where your beef comes from. You know your rancher. You're providing for them the ability for them to provide for themselves and for their community the solution. What they pitch as the problem is the solution. And so they should stop stealing people's land, allow ranchers to keep their land and keep providing for the environment and providing for their community and providing for these big cities that need water, and find real water solutions. Maybe just like the solar water catchment would be another great use of a concrete jungle and all these buildings. What if they just installed cisterns, whether they were above ground or below ground? I couldn't even imagine the impact of water catchment in a city. It's a huge impervious surface. You know, realize you're going to have to treat that because of all the cars and pollution and everything. But the pollution's going somewhere, and it's got to be treated anyway, regardless. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there are lots of solutions. And Trinity, I appreciate your time, y'all. So whatever contact information regarding this meeting next Wednesday, and this should post today, Friday, the 23rd or 4th or somewhere in there.
24th, yeah.
24th?
No, is it 24th or is it 25th?
It's 25th. Friday the 25th.
Yes. You can tell how well we pay attention to the time.
Yeah.
It's 20 something. It's October, probably.
But we'll be down below and Wednesday. I should be able to pull that off. I'm going to do everything in my power to be there. I should be able to do that. And if you can't be there, you can pray. You can also electronically correspond. Let's put some pressure on this and let's share this video, make people aware of it, and let's show up in mass to do what we can, not only for these poor people that are going to get robbed, but for all I know, they could come and rob my land for me. So, you know, that's the mindset to keep in mind. Like, this, don't isolate this to a region or an area.
Right.
I mean, it can happen to any and all of us. I appreciate Trinity investing his time, money, and talents and flying to Texas and putting this information out there, allowing these people to speak and then amplifying it. I think that first video got like 300,000 views. So that's awesome, awesome work on your end. And y'all, Trinity, if anybody is looking for you or information, where can they find you?
Go to lifeinthewest.com. That's my website, lifeinthewest.com. It's pretty easy to find. So,
yep. So I will link that down below as well. Trinity, thank you for your time. Y'all, this is a value for value proposition. So if you do enjoy what we do and the information we put out, please go to thetexasboys.com. Make sure you're on our email list. Check out our honey and new coffee line. And if it's something that you use on a regular basis, you know that we really love and appreciate the support. We love our subscribers and our customers. And remember, y'all, now more than ever, stay fearless, my friends.